Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, January 17th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
The risk asset rally fades as U.S. futures fall, oil slides, and the yen strengthens.
U.S.-China tensions rise after Huawei comes under scrutiny from U.S. authorities.
Theresa May begins the search for a compromise on Brexit.
And we say farewell to a finance industry icon.
The House passed bills to end the government shutdown, but it has little Republican support. Plus, federal workers are tapping into retirement accounts to make ends meet. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower. It's 4-2 wild win for the Nets. Big comeback to win in overtime in Houston. After two losses, St. John's with a Big East win over Creighton.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by SEI. Asset managers don't get results that are off the charts when their solutions are off the shelf. Learn how SEI's operating platform can turn infrastructure into a competitive advantage at seic.com/IMS.
The rally in risk assets appears to be fading this morning. 5:01 on Wall Street, we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 11 points, Dow futures down 83, NASDAQ futures down 32. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.71%, yield on the 2-year 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1% or 52 cents to $51.79 a barrel. And COMEX gold, little change at $1,293.60. An ounce. This data check brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. Nathan.
Karen, U.S.-China relations may be weighing on sentiment this morning. Bloomberg News has learned U.S. authorities have launched an investigation into Chinese tech giant Huawei. Bloomberg's Stephen Engel reports from Hong Kong.
The U.S. federal prosecutors are indeed pursuing a criminal investigation for allegedly stealing trade secrets from U.S. business partners. The probe includes technology by T-Mobile. The investigation is in its advanced state, and that could lead to an indictment very soon.
The probe comes after Canadian authorities arrested Huawei's chief financial officer last month at the request of U.S. authorities.
The investigation weighed on stocks in Asia today, despite positive signs for the next round of U.S.-China trade talks. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has details from Singapore.
On the bell in China came news that Vice Premier Liu He would attend trade talks in the U.S., and you would think this would be market sentiment positive, but sellers had already moved in towards the close, sending the CSI 300 lower by 0.6%. A stronger yen weighed on the Nikkei, which closed down 0.2% in Tokyo, but the broader TOPIX index closed higher. Taiwan's TAIEX rose 0.3% as TSMC shares gained, despite its margin guidance missing estimates in the fourth quarter and its revenue outlook disappointing as iPhone demand lags. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, that lagging iPhone demand is also weighing on Apple's workforce. Sources tell Bloomberg Apple will cut back on hiring. Mark Gurman has more from the Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
It's unclear which divisions are going to be impacted. We know the artificial intelligence, according to Cook, is not going to be impacted. That's a big growing area for Apple at this point. But perhaps in their software engineering divisions or other divisions like special projects where they have people working on so many things already, they don't need any additional people at this point. It's unclear how short-lived this is going to be as well.
While Apple is cutting back on hiring, CEO Tim Cook says the company will avoid a complete hiring freeze.
We turn to the UK now, and Prime Minister Theresa May surviving a no-confidence vote. Now she must search for a compromise on Brexit.
Now MPs have made clear what they don't want. We must all work constructively together to set out what Parliament does want.
Some rival party leaders are pushing for a delay to Brexit and even a second referendum, Labour Party member Richard Bergen.
I think that an extension of Article 50 is fairly likely to happen, and if it does, it's because of the fact that the government has wasted 2.5 years negotiating with its own benches.
Still, the pound remains steady. It's trading at $1.2877.
Well, here in the U.S., calls for an impending recession are cropping up again. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with more on that. Good morning, John.
Morning, Nate. Torsten Slot, Deutsche Bank's chief international economist, says a combination of the China trade war and government shutdown could be enough to tip the U.S. economy into recession this year.
If the government shutdown continues, it could cause a recession. I mean, you could call it a technical recession, but we're getting a lot of incoming questions about how do you quantify this risk.
There is a similarly cautious tone from HSBC senior economic advisor Stephen King, who says U.S. recession risk is greater than normal. Rabobank says the plunge of the U.S. 12-month 10-year spread indicates a 69% chance of a recession by May of 2020. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thanks. We get a different view of the economy today from Charles Evans. The Chicago Fed president sits down for a conversation on Bloomberg radio and television. You can catch it at 4 p.m. Wall Street time.
Also in the 4 p.m. hour, we get a reading on big tech when Netflix releases fourth quarter results. Bloomberg's Greg Jarrett reports.
Two analysts boosted their rating on Netflix in the past week, predicting robust subscriber growth from hits like the Sandra Bullock film Bird Box. Still, it is a polarizing company. Despite outperforming all large-cap tech stocks last year, Netflix has a smaller share of buy ratings than Amazon, Alphabet, and Facebook. On Tuesday, Netflix raised its U.S. prices for the first time since 2017. In San Francisco, I'm Greg Jarrett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Greg, thank you. Finally, we say farewell to a finance industry icon. John Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, has died of cancer at the age of 89. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
John Bogle, he'd suggest you call him Jack, was an advocate of the average investor.
The small guy investing on his own is, I think, playing a fool's game.
He proselytized on behalf of patient long-term investing in a diversified group of well-run companies, counseling in his little book of common sense investing, Don't Do Something, Just Stand There. And he later conceded even he never figured how popular low-cost index-based mutual funds would turn out to be.
I was too stupid to realize that if we gave investors the best deal they would ever get, I'd be building a colossus.
He suffered the first of at least six heart attacks at age 31. In 1967, he had a pacemaker installed, and in 1996, he received a heart transplant. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Bob, thank you. S&P futures are down 10 points this morning. Dow futures down 76 and NASDAQ futures down 33. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, the yield 2.71%, and the euro at $1.1395. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It is 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to find out what's going on in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The House passed the latest in a series of bills to end the partial government shutdown, but it has little Republican support. The measure would provide $12.1 billion in disaster aid and reopen the nine shuttered federal departments and dozens of agencies through February 8th. But it does not include money President Trump is seeking for a border wall. Meanwhile, we're learning a growing number of federal workers caught up in the shutdown have been tapping into their retirement funds to make ends meet. The story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
It is a sign of how the government shutdown is squeezing day-to-day finances. Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board data show a 34% jump in the number of hardship withdrawals in the 2.5 weeks after Christmas when compared to the same period last year. The data goes through January 14th, the first weekday after many federal employees miss paychecks. The outflows mostly come from investments run by BlackRock, the sole manager for four of the Thrift Savings Plan's five individual funds. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
More than a million government contractors are also cutting back on spending. The White House doubled its estimate of the cost of the shutdown on the economy, saying it hadn't been counting the effects on contractors. The Pentagon says a suicide bomber in Syria has claimed the lives of two U.S. troops and two American civilians. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the killings. Three service members were also injured in the bombing. Patrick Shanahan, acting Secretary of Defense, says they are reaching out to families of those injured and killed.
Our fight against terrorism is ongoing, and we will remain vigilant and committed to its destruction.
Last month, President Trump announced U.S. troops would begin to withdraw from Syria. The New York area is about to get a reminder. It's January. Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolin reports.
Michael, we have a very weak storm system headed towards the tri-state area. It's going to cause snow to develop just after midnight. It'll fall through early tomorrow morning, and I think we're probably going to see accumulations under an inch across the tri-state area. Actually, the precipitation looks like it's going to mix with and change to a little bit of light rain tomorrow morning before it ends. Temperatures near 40, but it certainly looks like it could cause a few problems for tomorrow morning's commute, especially the front end of it when we're still dealing with light snow, say between about 5 a.m. and 6:30 a.m. Michael?
Then this weekend, another system has the chance to dump more snow starting Saturday night. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 510 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashar.
Nathan, what a win for the Nets in Houston. They trailed by 17 in the fourth quarter. Spencer Dinwiddie led them back. He tied the game with a three-pointer, and then he struck again in overtime.
Nets down two with the ball. 36 seconds to go. Big offensive rebound for Graham. Now Dinwiddie out high on the right. Dinwiddie driving it in the paint. Bump, shoot, scores, and a foul is called. Dinwiddie will go to the line with a chance at a three-point play.
The free throw is good, and the Nets take the lead, an 8-0 run.
Chris Garino, Nets Radio, Brooklyn 145, Rockets 142. Dinwiddie, 33 points, 25 of them coming in the fourth quarter in the OT. The Nets put up 46 fourth quarter points. Jared Allen had a big night, 20 points, 24 rebounds for Houston. James Harden went for 58. The Rockets took 70. Three-point shots. The Warriors took a mere 49 three-pointers. Three-point shooting and scoring just taking over the NBA these days. Golden State beat New Orleans 147-140. Steph Curry, 41 points. The Warriors, six straight wins. Showdown in the East. Boston beat Toronto 117-108 for Kyrie Irving, 27 points, 18 assists. Konaseka Hall, St. John's ended a two-game losing streak, 81-66 over Creighton. Shamori Ponds had to sit out the last game. He returned, went for 22. Longtime Met Wilmer Flores has signed with Arizona. The Australian Open, women's top seed Simona Halep needed a third set for the second straight match, but she won. So did the reigning U.S. Open champ Naomi Osaka. Venus Williams advanced. She won the third set at Love. Serena Williams begins her match shortly with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. S&P futures down 10 points. Dow futures down 74. NASDAQ futures down almost 32 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up on 512 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty. NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Global news, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The rally in risk assets fading with U.S. stock index futures and European shares falling after a mixed session in Asia as concerns about rising tension between America and China offset signs of better than expected to start to the earnings session. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down about 10 points. Dow futures down 68. NASDAQ futures down 30. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32. The yield 2.71%. The yield on the two-year, 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.9% or 47 cents to $51.84 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed at $12.93.70 an ounce. The euro, $1.13.92, and the yen, 108.76. Today we're watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims out at 8:30 Wall Street time and 9:45. It's a Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index. And we're also looking for earnings. We'll hear from companies including Morgan Stanley, Netflix, and American Express. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Republican allies of President Donald Trump say House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's request that the president postpone his planned State of the Union address is nothing more than a political ploy. In a letter, Pelosi noted that the Secret Service and the Homeland Security Department are entangled in the ongoing partial government shutdown and suggested Trump should address Congress another time. Meanwhile, the partial government shutdown has entered its 27th day. In sports in the NBA, the Nets won in overtime against the Rockets 145-142. The Celtics and Warriors were winners. In the NHL, the Bruins lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 519 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. And we're joined now on this Thursday morning by Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Watching futures contracts point slightly lower this morning, Drew, is the January relief rally running out of steam here, or is it just on pause, do you think?
I think it's more likely to just be on pause. You know, people were hoping to get more information. Obviously, the government shutdown has kind of cut off some of the economic data flow. But I do think, you know, we kind of have all we need in the data flow that we are going to get, which is, you know, keep an eye on initial claims, keep an eye on bank lending data, and, you know, some of the financials, obviously, you can get some information on that from there. You know, look at the ISM surveys. And if those are all kind of holding up, you know, the economy should be doing just fine.
Are you surprised, though, that the government shutdown isn't trickling into market sentiment at this point?
No, not really. I mean, I think if you look back historically, people have a hard time figuring out what to make of it. The range of estimates of the impact is all over the place. It's very difficult to know, you know, for example, for an economist, if someone's going to get paid, and there was a law passed yesterday that said people are going to get paid in the shutdown, or at least the federal workers are going to get paid during the shutdown, you know, does that really impact their spending? Do they have the ability to somehow, you know, obtain the cash to kind of keep going until they get the money back that they're owed? And I think, you know, I saw another story, I believe on Bloomberg, where people were talking about federal workers pulling money out of their 401ks right now.
Right.
In order to fund their expenses. So if they know they're going to get the money back, what does it do to their consumption patterns? And you know, I think that, you know, most likely they're going to maintain their consumption patterns if they can.
I'll draw your attention to another story on the Bloomberg terminal this morning, that it's not just government workers that are going without pay at the moment and, you know, could potentially get their pay back once the government does reopen. But there are about a million government contractors who are facing a lapse in pay as well because business isn't getting done. I mean, that has a economic impact as well, doesn't it?
It should. And, you know, I mean, the question there is kind of the nature of the contract that they're operating under. You know, if the government has a contract with a company and then those people are then working for that company, you know, how quickly do you turn off the spigot on that project? So, you know, that's the wild card, is that it's very hard to kind of go through all the different ways that people who will eventually get their payment from the government or who eventually end up, not eventually meaning that they will get paid, but who ultimately are paid by the U.S. government, how this trickles down through those various constituencies. And I think, you know, as I said, the range of estimates on the impact per week are all over the place.
Is there an impact or enough of an impact that it causes the Fed to consider altering its trajectory?
Well, since they said they're only going to hike twice this year, and most people, once the Fed said that, basically said they're going to hike in June and probably December of this year, you know, maybe I'm an optimist, but I think we'll be through this by then, and so I don't think it'll have an impact on the Fed.
What makes you feel so optimistic that they'll get through it? I mean, it seems like everybody's sort of dug in their heels in terms of the policymakers on Capitol Hill and on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue.
I'm just a born optimist. you know, nothing specifically, just, you know, the systems, you know, you can put off things for a while, but eventually, you know, people are going to come to the table, I would believe.
Are you optimistic about trade tensions between the U.S. and China right now?
Well, it seems like there's some reason for optimism. China is sending a pretty high-ranking person over to negotiate. I think that's a sign that maybe the lower-level people who have been talking to each other have gotten somewhere. And so now you send in a more senior person to kind of see if you can keep moving the ball forward. I think that should be, you know, that probably is a good sign. And, you know, if we can get some resolution there, I think it'll be easier for investors to kind of look through it and kind of look toward the future of what trading relationships might look like. And it has always been the case that if the end game of this trade tension is to improve the functioning of the trade system, then that would be kind of a price worth paying if you can get to a better place.
In our last 30 seconds here, testing your optimism once again with the trade tensions and partial government shutdown going on. Deutsche's Torsten Slok is talking recession this year. What do you think about that?
I think recession fears are overdone, and I don't see the U.S. economy decelerating rapidly enough this year to get it done. I don't see it happening next year either. I just can't imagine, you know, it's very difficult for me to look out the 18-month window that I can look out and reasonably be confident on and see a recession in that time frame.
Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Thanks so much for this. Really appreciate you being here on Bloomberg Daybreak. And taking a quick look at the markets at the moment, the snapshot shows futures contracts pointed lower. S&P futures down 8, Dow futures down 57 points, NASDAQ futures down about 27 points. And you're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak on this Thursday morning. For breaking news wherever you are, check out TikTok by Bloomberg, the first global news network designed for social media, offering live video coverage and hourly updated top news reports verified by Bloomberg. It's at TICTOC on Twitter.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and stocks overseas are falling as tensions rise between America and China. And once again, it involves Huawei Technologies. We get more from Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie in Beijing.
The federal investigation in Seattle is tied to civil suits filed against Huawei, including a 2017 case in which the world's second largest smartphone maker was found liable for the theft of T-Mobile's robotic technology. Sources say the investigation is at an advanced stage and an indictment could come soon. In Beijing, Tom McKenzie, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Tom. Meanwhile, China's chief trade negotiators headed back to the U.S. for the next round of talks. Beijing confirms Vice Premier Liu He will be in the U.S. on January 30th when negotiations resume.
Bank earnings continue today with Morgan Stanley reporting before the opening bell. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Bloomberg Intelligence says the bank's full-year results should meet its pre-tax margin goal, and fourth-quarter results should show trading outperforming with a business more skewed toward equities than most of its global peers, UBS being a notable exception. Forecasts are for Morgan Stanley to post an adjusted profit of 89 cents a share on revenue of more than $9.3 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Jeff. After the closing bell, we'll get earnings from American Express and Netflix.
In Europe, shares of Société Générale are down 3%. France's third largest bank says earnings will be hurt by the, quote, challenging environment in global capital markets.
British Prime Minister Theresa May has survived a no-confidence vote. She now must search for a compromise with Parliament to deliver a Brexit deal.
And shares of Apple are down nearly 1%. Bloomberg News has learned the company will cut back on hiring after selling fewer iPhones than expected and missing its revenue forecast for the holiday quarter.
5:32 on Wall Street. Let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 8 points. Dow futures down 61. NASDAQ futures down 28. The DAX in Germany is down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.71%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1%, down 53 cents to $51.78 a barrel. And COMEX gold is little changed at $1,293.70 an ounce. The euro at $1.1392, the British pound at $1.2872, and the yen at 108.80. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's happening in the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. New House Democrats stood outside Senator Mitch McConnell's office, calling on the majority leader to take a vote on the government shutdown. The House has voted on bills regarding the shutdown, but the Senate will not until the Democrats decide to include border wall funding. Democratic Congresswoman Lauren Underwood.
Every day since we've gotten sworn in, and we have been in session here in Washington, we have taken up a vote to reopen either a department, an agency, or the government writ large.
However, Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger is calling for everyone to put aside their pride.
Our inability to have this debate is an embarrassment, frankly, around the world that looks at us as this model democracy, and this is on all of us.
The shutdown is now in its 27th day. President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, says that he never denied that the Trump election campaign colluded with Russia during the 2016 presidential race, only that the president himself was not involved in collusion. The former New York mayor told CNN there is not a single bit of evidence the president of the United States committed the only crime you can commit here, conspiring with Russians to hack the DNC. It's a signal that a second summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un could happen soon. People familiar with the matter say a top North Korean official is set to meet President Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Washington later this week. President Trump plans to announce the findings of the first missile defense review in nearly a decade today. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
It includes a plan to study capabilities such as space-based interceptors and directed energy weapons. The president will go to the Pentagon, where he will make a case for additional funding to ask for missile defense monies. As we've reported, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency released a report this week saying China is developing a long-range bomber capable of delivering nuclear weapons to the U.S., and the president is expected to make the case that a space-based defense system will be the most effective against potential China and Russia attacks. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
House and Senate Democrats introduced bills to raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashow.
Nathan, the Nets were once 8-18. Since then, they've gone 15-5. They've reached 500. A sign of how good a team they've become on an off night for their top scorer, D'Angelo Russell. His backup, Spencer Dinwiddie, took over in Houston. The Nets trailed by 8 points with just over a minute to play. Dinwiddie hit 3 threes in the last 30 seconds. He got the game to overtime. Again, the Nets were down 7. They came back. They stunned the Rockets 145-142. Dinwiddie with 33 points, 25 coming in the fourth quarter in the OT. The Nets coach, Kenny Atkinson.
Great basketball game. Great basketball team. Again, you know, two teams fighting. Played their hearts out. We just made one more play than they did. But it was, I think we were down 12, 13 points with under four. So for our guys to stick with it, and we got contributions from everybody.
James Harden, two nights after scoring 57 points, scored 58. The Rockets in the loss set an NBA record. They hoisted up 70. Three-point shots. In London today, it's the Knicks and the Washington Wizards. Game tips at 3 o'clock. St. John's ended a two-game losing streak, 81-66 over Creighton. Australian Open, Serena Williams just underway in her match. Novak Djokovic's match is coming up. AFC Championship game Sunday night in Kansas City, expected to be played in sub-zero temperatures. Bundle up, Tom Brady.
Weather's a factor anytime you play in January. You know, Kansas City, obviously a cold climate. They're used to it. And we've been practicing it for last 2 months. It hasn't been extreme cold, but it's been cold enough to know, you know, what you got to wear and, you know, how you got to deal with it the best way you can. You know, you just dress for it, and you know, hopefully our blood's thickened up enough here being in the Northeast to deal with some of the cold, which I think it has.
Patriots and Chiefs in the AFC after the Rams and Saints in the NFC with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
Thank you, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on ZTE, the Chinese telecom company that President Trump spared. Also in this week's issue, how PayPal escaped obscurity by embracing credit card competitors. Drake Bennett wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
For a lot of people, PayPal is still associated with like eBay auctions and just the button on a website. But at this point, it's become a much bigger company, and it's got its fingers in basically every part of this sprawling digital payments ecosystem.
You read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why? Visit businessweek.com. Or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street time for the Tri-State Business Report. Let's check in with Bloomberg's Ed Khoury.
Morning, Nathan. In the last 3 months of 2018, purchases of single-family homes in Greenwich slipped 2.2% from a year ago, the first decline in three quarters. That's according to Miller Samuel and Douglas Elliman Real Estate. The homes that changed hands sold for a median of $1.5 million, a 17% drop. Environmentalists are urging New Jersey officials to speed up regulations of two toxic chemicals, PFOA and PFOS. They've been recommended for tight new limits by scientists, but subjected to unexplained delays of up to 2 years, according to NJ Spotlight. And department stores have been giving makeovers to their beauty departments recently. Bloomingdale's 59th Street flagship store has redone its beauty department, which is spread across four floors. Forbes calls it possibly the biggest, boldest idea of what a department store like Bloomie's can bring to its customers. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thank you. It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Andrew O'Day on WBZ in Boston. I'm talking about fresh disclosures by GE regarding its political donations.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Profits at railroad giant CSX beat expectations, even as coal and grain carloads slowed.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on Hitachi's decision to ditch its UK nuclear power projects.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, we're talking about the Philly Fed Index of Regional Business Conditions.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting chip makers face increasing risks after disappointing Apple sales.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Children's clothing retailer Gymboree has filed for bankruptcy less than a year and a half after emerging from an earlier Chapter 11. San Francisco-based company operates more than 900 stores under three brands in North America, says it'll shut its Gymboree and Crazy 8 brand stores while trying to find a bidder for higher-end Janie and Jack stores. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Fairleigh Dickinson University's Silberman College of Business, offering an executive MBA and a blended Saturday MBA that combines online and on-campus classes. Visit fdugrad.org/radio.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The rally in risk assets fading, with U.S. stock index futures and European shares falling after a mixed session in Asia, as concerns about rising tension between America and China offset signs of a better-than-expected start to the earnings season. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 9 points this morning. Dow futures are down 63. NASDAQ futures down 28. The 10-year Treasury is up 2/32nds, yield 2.71%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.2%, down 60 cents to $51.70 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed at $12.94 an ounce. The euro, $1.14, and the yen, 108.77. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, it is day 27 of the government shutdown, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is telling President Trump, if there's no money for workers, there's not enough workers to provide security for your State of the Union address. However, Homeland Security officials say they are fully prepared to do their job, and allies of the president say this is nothing more than about politics. It's day four of a teacher strike in Los Angeles. Educators are demanding lower class sizes, increased staffing, and higher salaries. The teachers union and the school district plan to return to the bargaining table today. In sports, in the NBA, the Nets won in overtime against the Rockets, 145-142. The Celtics and Warriors were winners. In the NHL, the Bruins lost. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:48 on Wall Street, and we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. We're joined now by Jennifer Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion Editor in our London Bureau, where Brexit remains front and center, Jen. And Leonid Bershidsky is taking a look at what the EU wants to hear now from the UK following Theresa May's Brexit deal defeat. What is Bershidsky's take on the reaction from European capitals?
He says it's kind of passive aggressive. So what he does by looking at what European leaders have said is as he sees that there's some astonishment at the magnitude of May's defeat. There's exasperation and cries of, please tell us what you finally want us to achieve. But make no mistake, the EU is continuing to negotiate, and these reactions really are just part of that process.
Yeah, so what do European leaders want?
Well, Brzezinski says they only want to hear really specific things. And if you listen very closely to what they're saying, a list emerges. First is a request for Britain to delay its end March departure from the EU and have that be postponed to allow for more time in order to achieve a clear position. What does the EU want the UK to do within that time? Well, there's two things. I mean, there's one, which is expressed by European Council President Donald Tusk, which he said in a tweet, is that if a deal is impossible and no one wants a deal, then who will finally have the courage to say what the only positive solution is? That, of course, is a reference to withdrawing the Article 50 letter and cancelling Brexit altogether. We'll leave aside the reality of that actually happening in the UK, but there's another option which the EU would be prepared to discuss, and that's a so-called Norway model, where Britain would remain in the European Economic Area or a full permanent customs union.
All right, so those are some of the options that European leaders are looking for now as May begins cross-party talks. Where does that leave her?
Well, at least she's not going to be shooting in the dark. And the next logical step would be for her to ask more time and test the Norway option. And it might well turn out to be acceptable to conservative Remainers and the opposition Labour Party. If that fails, the next step is to call for a second referendum. And should that fail, then there is no other option but prepare for a no-deal exit. But if May doesn't ask for an extension, she's kind of back in what is the typical operating procedure for the European Union, which is last-minute solutions. We are not short of examples of this from the crisis involving Greece. Brzezinski's point is that the UK isn't going to gain anything by that kind of brinkmanship, and all it can do now is make the next logical moves, regardless of how the confidence vote went. And then, you know, as you know, that she won that vote.
All right, let's turn now to Joe Nocera's great piece looking back on the life of Jack Bogle, the apostle of index funds who never gave up. Nocera says you would have done well to listen to the Vanguard founder. What does he mean by that?
Well, Bogle introduced the first index fund geared to individual investors in 1976. And his idea couldn't have been more different, because instead of trying to beat the market, the index fund would hold the same stocks as the S&P 500 and simply match the market. See, because Bogle knew that even the greatest fund manager is likely to fall back to earth sooner or later. So he wound up having the last laugh. If you had stuck with his philosophy, what was called at the time Bogle's folly would have given you a total return of 8,559%.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing to think about. I mean, why did it take so long for Bogle's ideas to catch on?
It is curious, but you have to think of all the things that were happening since 1976 to turn investors' heads. The market rocketing up in the 1980s and the internet bubble in the 90s. And so for many, many years, Bogle felt as if he were preaching to an empty church. Eventually, the great mass of investors came around and agreed with him. And Vanguard eventually became the nation's largest mutual fund complex with more than $5 trillion under management.
And of course, Bogle was preaching the index fund gospel as recently as November, when stocks were sliding precipitously. Was he happy with the way things turned out?
Well, he would always take a broader view. And there is one thing that would provoke a lot of dissatisfaction, because he saw that far too much of the popularity of index funds was being driven by exchange-traded funds, which allowed investors to get quickly in and out of the market. And the idea that you can trade the S&P 500 all day long just seemed to him to be nuts. And so Bogle understood, this is Nocera's take, is that Bogle understood that investing is hard, and most of us lack not only the time to put into it, but the fortitude to zig when others are zagging or buy when others are selling. And that's why everyone should have listened to Jack Bogle.
Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks for this. You can read more about this and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion on the Bloomberg terminal. Type OPIN. Go. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute, resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
President Trump has renominated a slew of picks for administration leadership posts, including at the Labor Department and Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The action was needed for nominees who were not confirmed by the Senate last year. The House passed a $12 billion package to help communities ravaged by hurricanes and other natural disasters. It also blocks President Trump from diverting money for certain projects to build a border wall. And Democrats have unveiled a bill to raise the hourly federal minimum wage to $15.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Steve, thank you. Now, another legal news. The U.S. Justice Department's decision to bar all internet gambling could have a chilling effect on the industry. For more on the implications, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Keith Miller, law professor at Drake University.
This was a surprise, but not completely a surprise, because there had been rumors in the air that this was coming. The Wire Act was a 1961 law that Robert F. Kennedy, when he was Attorney General, got through Congress to combat organized crime. And the idea behind the Wire Act was to look at wire transmission facilities. In 1961, that would have been a telephone, but now it includes the internet. And it essentially said that any use of those wire transmission facilities to transmit information on bets or to take bets on sporting events, and that's the language that's used, violated the Wire Act. And over time, it was used against organized crime. In the early 2000s, the Bush administration used it to some extent to harass internet poker companies. And it ended up that a couple of lotteries in 2009 wanted to have online sales of their lottery tickets. And in 2011, the Office of Legal Counsel said, don't worry about it. The Wire Act only applies to sports betting. And that really is what gave rise to the spread of internet poker and internet lotteries. Well, we know what happened Monday. The Office of Legal Counsel looked at that same statute and said, that's not the way we read this law. The Wire Act would describe it charitably as a poorly worded and unclear. And I think it lends itself to this sort of political back and forth.
Is it also outdated in the modern era?
It is, because in 1961, there was very little legal gambling that went on anywhere in the United States. The illegal gambling market was dominated by organized crime, and so there needed to be a very strong response to combat that. Now our views about gaming have, for better or for worse, changed quite a bit. The view of the Wire Act, taking that and applying it now, does nothing to make our country or our world safer.
That's Keith Miller, a law professor at Drake University, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And futures are lower, with S&P futures down 8 points, Dow futures down 56, and NASDAQ futures down 26, and NYMEX crude oil falling 1.2% at $51.70 a barrel. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.